Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Do you think Joe Biden's the right guy?
We don't have a choice. And I think he is the right guy. He's a good guy. He's trying to do the right thing. And we don't have a choice. And I say that in a very positive, good way.
Then what would be your message to President Biden?
Keep up the fight. Keep at him. Go at him hard. And every chance you get, go at him. Go at him. Because people, they take notice of that stuff. And don't be, he's not afraid. But he's doing what he should do. He knows that.
If you're taking political advice from Robert De Niro, are you doing it right? Look, I know that people were cheering him the other day because he was talking about these bigoted protesters and their hatred for Israel. And you people, you don't know, you don't understand. You got to be smart. You're being dumb. And I always thought, when I saw that, I immediately said, I don't know if he cares, right? I can't say that he actually doesn't care. I'm not calling Robert De Niro a bigot by any stretch of the imagination. But I think it's clear that everything that moves him is political about this, and he wants them to stop, so therefore it'll be easier on Joe Biden, because all of these riots, all of these things on college campuses, they all look terrible for the Democratic Party. I mean, awful. Tony Katz today. Great to be with you. Find everything going on over at TonyKatz.com. I mean, it does. It looks just miserable, miserable, miserable for the party. And it was this really interesting couple of things that came out of X, actually, and some commentaries. I saw some on social media and some other places. People talk about 1968, the summer of love, right? And all the riots that took place and the fighting that took place and the problems that took place. And they compare what's going on at these colleges, and look at how they're fighting on the campuses. This is how you protest, and this is how you get things done. Did anybody ever ask themselves, did the protests of 1968 actually get the protesters what they wanted? And I saw Jonah Goldberg point this out. I think he was on like CNN or one of those. And I know Goldberg is smart, but his never Trumperness just ended any type of respect. It's like David French and a whole host of people. I know that they're bright guys, but they allowed their anger and a pseudo intellectualism to permeate their soul, in my view. Because the idea of never Trump is a ridiculous proposition. Sometimes in life, you don't get what you want. Sometimes in life, you have to deal with what you get. And if you were somebody who thought Trump this, Trump that, Trump the other, but the choice was Trump or Hillary, and you're like, I'm not voting? Well, I'm sorry, that's messed up. And if you tell me the choice is Trump or Biden, and you're like, I'm not voting? Equally messed up. This never Trumpism was always a disaster of a concept. But Jonah Goldberg points out that, you know what happened in 1968? What happened in 1968 is that Richard Nixon won the election and Vietnam continued for years. That's what happened. That is the byproduct. And that's worthy of noting. Like that's smart to just take a moment and take a look at history. Here's the result of this anger, of this kind of nonsense. And I think it is clear that people have looked at what's happened on the college campuses and these protesters and their demands. That we demand food, and we demand that you divest from Israel, and we demand HIV tests. I'm sorry, what? Oh, yeah. On some campuses, that was one of their demands, along with some other things that I don't know if I can say on the radios. These people are children. But let me go back to De Niro really quick.
This that's the only way. I use figuratively when I say punch him in the face. Go at him. A bully, you punch in the face. The trouble with Trump is he's not just a bully. He's a stupid bully.
You warned America.
That's boring. that's boring, and it lets you know that that De Niro is not this great mind, but he doesn't have to be. Solid actor. If you want to call him best in a generation, I'm going to let other people do it. I'm just not giving him the respect right now. I know. Shame on me. He's not just a bully. He's a stupid bully. Do you know smart bullies? See, that's why the terminology is so ridiculous, and that's why I'm dismissive. And this is why I say when he's out there telling these protesters to stop it, he knows it looks bad. He knows it looks bad, and it hurts. It hurts with the electorate. But I don't think that De Niro can unring the bell. And with this, we have to go to the statement from Columbia Law Review. Columbia Law students, this was Aisha Hansi who put this out. She's over at Fox. She's great. The Columbia Law Review Admin Board of Student Editors is now asking the law school to cancel exams. This was the letter as is written, as she posted it, and I read it to you. Dear CLS community, as the Administrative Board of Student Editors of the Columbia Law Review, we urge the law school to cancel exams and give all students passing grades for their work throughout the semester. In the alternative, it is our view that the law school at the very least observes the community's overwhelming call for mandatory pass-fail during this horrific time for our campus. That's right. The law school demands, or the students demand, that the law school, first they demand that the law school give everybody a passing grade. Give everybody A's and move on with your day. But at the very least, go pass-fail. Cancel the exams. Why? I quote, "The violence we witnessed last night has irrevocably shaken many of us on the review. We know this to be the same for a majority of our classmates. Videos have circulated of police clad in riot gear mocking and brutalizing our students. The events of last night left us and many of our peers unable to focus and highly emotional during this tumultuous time. This only follows the growing distress that many of us have felt for months as the humanitarian crisis abroad continues to unfold and as the blatant anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and racism on campus have escalated. Our response is not disproportionate to the outsized impact it has had on many of us in the community, a crowd of people that proudly represent their membership in a white supremacist, neo-fascist hate group were storming our campus just days ago." All right, we've read enough. I, from now on, will not engage law firms that hire from Columbia Law. I don't do it. Now, it's not that I deal with a lot of law firms. I've had the same lawyer for a while now who deals with contract stuff. I have a personal lawyer for other needs, and I don't really need that many lawyers. Like, I've never had the issues. But I will ask if I ever have to hire a firm, if they hire anybody from Columbia Law, and if they do, they're out. You hire from Columbia Law, you're not getting lawyers, you're getting children. Can you imagine that these are the people you're going to look to represent you in court? Who are you? These are people who are going to fight for you. These are people who are going to actually try and represent your best interest. They're so shook, they can't take finals. They don't deserve to be lawyers. They don't deserve to be lawyers. Don't let them pass. Make them take the damn tests. Because that's what it takes. First, the idea that you're irrevocably shaken means you don't have the capacity to be a lawyer. You don't have the capacity to be a professional. You shouldn't be allowed a driver's license. If you are so shaken, you should not be somebody who's functioning in the civil society. Let us find a place for you in the asylum. Irrevocably shaken? Oh, holy hell. Now, whatever they bring up about white supremacists, neo-fascists storming the campus just days ago, I have no idea what they're referring to, unless that's how you describe all the protesters out there supporting Hamas. I mean, those people? You want to talk about those people? Yeah, those people are disgusting. Those people are violent bigots. Those people are dangerous and want to destroy Western civilization. Whoo, that's a real issue. I agree. Now go take your damn test. You don't get to be irrevocably shook or shaken. And the university needs to look at these students and say, grow up, put on your big boy and big girl pants, and go take your test. This is the moment that a university decides that they're in the job of educating or they're in the job of providing. The university should not be in the job of providing degrees. The university should be doing the job of educating young men and women so they have skill sets to take them into a better life. Part of that skill set is getting over your trauma and getting on with business. Getting over your trauma is the difference between childhood and adulthood. Getting over your trauma is what separates men from boys and women from girls. And I do not argue. I do not argue that there isn't trauma out there. There is real, legitimate trauma out there. This is not it. Sorry. And even when there is trauma, life does not stop. This is really what's being asked of you, me, and we. They are asking, no, demanding that because they claim to feel a certain way, all of us need to change how we act. They're saying that future Americans should be okay with lawyers who never sat for finals but got an A grade because they went through something tough. Not a one of you stood up and said, hey, fellow students who are supporting a terrorist organization, sit down and shut your bitch mouths up. Not a one of you pretended to put forth a bit of moral clarity. We don't stand with terrorists. Why don't you losers sit down and get the hell off our campus? We have to study. Not a one of you, you outrageous cowards. Outrageous cowards. Right now, in America, a man woke up this morning with a cold. And it happens, right? The temperature gets warm and it's air conditioning inside in the back. It happens. Maybe the allergies, stuffy nose, and the head's kind of groggy. But they woke up because the alarm clock went off. And, well, they had to get up. Yeah, it was only 6 hours of sleep. But that's because they work a job nights as well. And they got up because they have to get to their factory job because that's what really provides the insurance for the two kids, including the oldest. She's a senior and she cannot wait to go to college. But he's watching what's happening in colleges and isn't quite sure he should send his daughter. But she would never talk to him again if he didn't. So, man, there's a lot of angst going on in this cold. This cold is bothering him. Oh, and it's running, but it's stuffy and the eyes are itchy. And as he's making his coffee, right? He's got the big thermos that he utilizes because it's a lot of coffee because he drives the 45 minutes to the factory and he's got to get the lunch together because who can afford to go out for lunch anymore? You can't afford to go out for lunch anymore. So he's got the coffee and he's got a drink and maybe he'll pick up one of the big gulps and treat himself to that and get in the car. Oh, good Lord, the air conditioning's not working perfectly. He's got to remind himself to get over to the mechanic and have the blower looked at. But there he is, and he's blowing his nose, and he's driving into work. He's trying to clear his head a little bit, and then he's thinking about the job after the factory, and he's got to do that for only that's a 5 hours tonight. And then don't forget the next night that you got the youngest is performing at the middle school there in the choir competition. You got to be there for that, and that guy does that 5 days a week. That guy is as shook and as shaken as anybody else in America. And every morning the alarm clock goes off and he wakes up and he does it. He doesn't get to say, give me a pass, because the mortgage company won't allow it. And that college, wherever that daughter's going, won't allow it. You write the check. You get the financial aid. You write the check. You're responsible for it. Nobody gives him a pass. Two jobs, making sure he's with his kids here, making sure he's protecting his family there, fighting through the cold. No one gives him a pass. As a matter of fact, you at Columbia University hate that guy and you call him a bigot. You call him a bigot for wanting a country that maybe looks at him and says, hey, we see you. Maybe just doesn't lecture to him every day. You don't even have to give him a pat on the back. He doesn't need a freaking attaboy. He just wants to be left alone for 5 minutes. And all you demand is his some level of insane fealty to whatever the woke cause du jour is. And oh, by the way, pay more taxes because you're not paying your fair share. He's shook. He is shaken. And every day he wakes up and he does it again. Columbia Law students are the weakest, most pathetic, most awful, despicable, ugly group of people I have come across. And that only group that beats them, the only group that beats them, are those who actually think Hamas is worthwhile. You weak, little, pathetic children. Shame on your parents. Shame on you. And shame on Columbia if you let these losers into the world of law without taking the test. You know what? Take the test or don't. I still wouldn't hire anybody from Columbia Law School. Not a chance I would put my trust in one of these people. I'm Tony Katz.
Teaching is not what you do, it's who you are. It's who you are. No, for real, I know that. Believe me, I know that. By the way, I actually taught for a number of years in law school. And then I was a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. No, I don't go for that.
No, I don't think anybody's going to applaud for that. You keep telling these stories, and they don't quite fit as well, President Biden, as you think they do. You seem to have a really, really deep, detailed history of telling falsehoods.
Name me one.
How about all the time you spent with President Xi Jinping of China, or your Amtrak stories and all the rest. Tony Katz today. This one, the guys at PolitiFact said was half true. And what's the half true? You made the claim back in 2022 that for 4 years you were a full professor at the University of Pennsylvania. It wasn't 4 years. And you served as the Benjamin Franklin Presidential Professor of the Practice at the University of Pennsylvania. Did you do any teaching at all? You didn't actually teach. You didn't do it the way a professor does it. But you just love to say the things. It doesn't even matter to you what it is. It's you know, the whole conversation, for example, of how you talk about your late son Beau Biden. You make it sound like he died in warfare. He didn't. He died of brain cancer, and it's awful. But you keep saying it. You keep discussing it. And that's why everything you do and everything you say always gets checked, double-checked, and rechecked. Over and over, again and again and again. He can't stop himself. He cannot help himself. So much so, one of the great stories from National Review, Washington Post fact checker gives up on recording Biden's lies. That was from 2021. He can't stop. And the administration, his people, they don't care. Everyone's just like, whatever. Whatever. Anytime Joe Biden speaks, triple check it, won't you? Triple check what the man says. Always. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz Today. So the jobs report comes out because it's the first Friday of the month, and that's when the jobs report comes out. And the jobs report says that we grew 175,000 jobs, but the expectation was 240,000. So we are below estimates. And now the unemployment rate goes up to 3.9% as opposed to staying at 3.8%, which is higher than it was the month before. Yet somehow the market responds by saying, and I quote, "Woohoo!" And you have the Dow futures were over 500. The market for a while was over 400. Lord only knows where it's going to land. What is everybody cheering? Unless, of course, less jobs means a slowdown of the economy, which means inflation can come down and rates can come down, which would make people happy. Is that what it means? Tony Katz Today, what is going on, everybody? Dr. Matt Will joins me, economist at the University of Indianapolis, Dr. Matt Will, W-I-L-L, Dr. Matt Will on X. Let's take a look at this report. I don't think we've paid too much attention to unemployment rate as opposed to labor force participation going on, but 175,000 against 240,000, this is good news.
Tony, I, if you don't mind, I'm going to change direction on you and say, I'm going to go in a completely different direction. It's a bad report. The revision from 2 months was down 22,000. The expectation was higher than 175,000. Private markets were only 167,000. Wage increases were below expectations. Participation rate did not improve. The U6 unemployment rate went up. This is a bad report. Put that aside. Let's talk about why the market loves this bad report. That's the big headline here.
Okay. You're going to ask your own question and answer it. I love it. It means less work as a host. Why does the market love this report?
Because of three things that have happened. This is number three. It means a possible rate cut. There are three things that happened recently. The Fed signaled just a couple weeks ago that it may change its direction from tightening the balance sheet to quantitative easing. And then Wednesday, 2 days ago, the Federal Reserve changed direction on its open market operations. That means it's going to change direction and start monetizing the debt again. It's been dumping its balance sheet, which is what we need to control inflation. It's been dumping it to the tune of $95 billion. It's now going to reduce the amount of bonds that it dumps. And it indicated in this report it may consider increasing its balance sheet, which is the wrong thing to do. And this labor report gives it ammunition and reason to do it. Why? Can I ask my own question again?
Oh, if you should. I love this.
Because the Fed has two mandates, full unemployment and control inflation. And if unemployment looks bad, they can ignore inflation for a little bit and cut interest rates and increase their balance sheet. That's a bad thing. My previous prediction, I may change. We might see a rate cut this year.
And so what's interesting is that traders are supposedly now pricing in the possibility of two rate cuts by the end of 2024 based on one report. This seems to be reactionary, not rational.
Yes, you are 100% correct. It is completely irrational what they're doing. But this is the addict. The market is the druggie. And they're living on the street and they say, oh, a rate cut. I'm getting a rate cut soon. Can I have two? They haven't even got their first one yet, and they're already anticipating a second one because they saw the Fed indication. I am disappointed with Jerome Powell. He changed course this week. I'm very disappointed with Jerome Powell.
And changing course, it's that he started to signal a little bit of softness. Well, maybe the cut will come. Well, maybe the cut will happen. It was that kind of talk, right?
No, I'm gonna spin it a little differently. What his indication was through the reports and the actions, plus his comments this week, is that inflation is not that important to us anymore. That's what he said. That scares me, because inflation is the thing that destroys your standard of living. It destroys the value of your income. and it allows government to spend and get away with it, which I wonder if there's a political angle behind what he's doing, which disappoints me if it is.
Talking to Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis, and of course he's discussing how do I make life easier for my boss, Joe Biden, to have a better economic reality to help him win re-election. I think there are some economists who want to look at this, though, and say, look, you got unemployment, it's still under 4%, and you know, you got year over year things are going well. You know, there's a lot out there that would tell you that everything that you're looking at right now from this report, oh sure, the jobs are down, but that everything's a spin to, hey, here's why it's good. It's the very Jared Bernstein of the White House Economic Council, White House administration, or Biden administration, White House kind of putting the happy spin on it. You don't even understand how good this is for you. But do they have an argument that maybe this is better than people want to say? I mean, look how the market's responding.
I can just tell you what I know to be a fact, and the fact is that this is a bad unemployment report. I mean, okay, the revisions for the last 2 months are down 22,000. Okay, I got a question for you, Tony. Is losing 22,000 jobs good or bad?
I have to assume bad.
Okay. Wage increases are below expectations.
Were they government jobs? Because if they were government jobs, then maybe I could say good.
Unfortunately, they weren't, because the private jobs of this 175,000, only 167,000 were government or were private jobs. So wages were down below expectations. Participation rate did not improve. And the U6 number, which is some people think is a better indication of unemployment, went up. Now, again, if you're a Keynesian economist, you like these kind of reports. They're bad for the average person, for private companies. They're good for government. They're good for big government spending. They're good for cutting the rate so that the government can monetize its debt. So it's good for those things, but it all depends. What's your definition of good or bad? My definition of good is smaller government, lower inflation, higher standard of living, more people employed. That's my definition.
One of the interesting things that took place as this happened, this report came out, is that the 10-year Treasury fell off a cliff. Now, it slowly worked its way back a little bit. The 10-year Treasury had been at a level of 4.6 or higher, and it was sending the 30-year fixed mortgage into the 7.5 and higher territory. And then it dropped, the minute this report came out, to 4.4. And now, I mean, it's gone back up to 4.5. So these are little changes that can mean a lot. Why would the 10-year Treasury note, and the 30-year fixed mortgage is based on the 10-year Treasury, why would the 10-year Treasury come down because of this report?
It's a short-term drop. It's strictly a short-term drop. That's all it is. You can't read too much into this, because the value of the market went up for two reasons. The top line in the present value calculations meant more cash flow. The bottom line went lower numbers, because the 10 years just reacting to the Fed. So if I were to give you a brief answer, the indication is that the Fed's going to cut rates means that the base rate will fall, which means the 10 year, which is base rate plus, the base is going to drop.
So now you have this fight, and we've talked about it before. There's the economists like yourself, and then there is the Wall Street druggie. And who wins this battle? Because we can see consumer price index, producer price index, all show us that the inflation is going nowhere. All this leading to going back to Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, and you're discussing your disappointment in him and this idea that maybe inflation doesn't matter as much as it did. What specifically was Jerome Powell doing this week that has people like yourself saying, hey, he's playing political, he isn't focused on the actual economic realities, shame on him?
Well, first of all, I want to say one thing that's important. I'm a financial economist, not an economist, because the people on Wall Street love this because they're addicts. The traditional theoretical ivory tower economists, they like this too, because they believe in bigger government and bigger Keynesian models. The financial economists, those of us that live in the financial world, which is often Wall Street, but from an objective viewpoint, we don't like bigger government. We don't like the fact that Jerome Powell has been subjugated by the ivory tower economics professors in his think tank who have said bigger government, more lower interest rates, monetize the debt, expand employment. Who cares about inflation? So he's been co-opted by the people that I think have the wrong opinion about a free market.
Let's talk about some of the other things that we have been seeing. There was a report on Bloomberg talking to Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis, about rents. And the reporting on rents was that we are seeing a three-year high, not since the middle of COVID, in small businesses being late, if not defaulting, on retail space rents. This coincides with reports that about in 2027, a lot of these big projects, multi-million dollar mortgages that would normally get refinanced are going to start coming due, if you will. And there's a question of what's going to happen on a large scale of real estate, specifically in office space, which is having its own issues because people aren't going back to the office. Let's start with this on small business rents, these small businesses at levels of default not seen in 3 years. This doesn't get the market concerned?
It should. It should definitely get the market concerned because you are correct in your analysis. But add to that, these are long-term leases. So they have been immune from the crisis that we experienced with the pandemic. They're now coming due. They're now going to have to be repaid. I'm sorry, re-upped. So a lease is re-upped. Or if it's a long-term, let's say a mortgage, they usually, and this is a little nerdy, I apologize, they're usually like a five-year mortgage amortized over 30 years. That means it's like a 30-year loan, but they have to repay it every 5 years. That's the cliff that's coming. That's the crisis that's coming, that these people who can't afford a 30-year mortgage have to refinance it 5 years from now, which is now.
Which is right now, when that starts coming due, right? You're certainly going to see some fire sales in terms of office space and downtown space. But does it have a ripple effect on the smaller spaces, on the smaller sized landlords?
Well, of course it does. But sometimes in a good way. Because I know, have firsthand knowledge of people that are in a Class A space in downtown Indianapolis who have moved into lower quality space because they can't afford the nicer space. And so there will be a benefit from the low-end stuff, just like the used car market and the repair market saw an uptick during the pandemic because people couldn't afford or buy new cars. So don't be surprised if there's a little bit of benefit there. But if the tide is falling, it's eventually going to catch everybody.
Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. A lot more to get to. I'm Tony Katz. It's one of those things where if you told me it was fake, I'd believe you. It was just made for like some TikTok world, which I believe so many videos are. They're not real. They're not really being made. They're not real discussions. It's just, hey, what's going to outrage and get some clicks? And then off they go for the clicks. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. And by the way, thanks to all the people who gave us the clicks. You know, there was that video out from Portland State University where the students made shields out of rubber garbage cans. They literally cut out shields and they started running out of their encampment. They were trying to get away from the police, getting through a barricade. And they just, one of them gets like tackled by the cops and the other ones are jumping through. And the whole thing is so ridiculous. And so Sarah, who runs all my digital stuff, I said, hey, we need this. And she made it. She put it to Yakety Sax, the Benny Hill theme there. And it's nothing but these pathetic kids and in like gas masks and those COVID masks and helmets running right into the cops and then boom, right to the ground.
It's we're over 200,000 views on this. It's been a day. It's been 24 hours. Why? World-class political insight. Nobody. Yakety Sax. That's the name of the song. Is it Boots Randolph? Is that that's the dude's name? Boots. I think that's it. Boots Randolph. Who did Yakety Sax? That's it. Homer Lewis Boots Randolph. Yeah, but that'll get you mentioned on the TVs. So yeah, so that video is fantastic. Then there's this one, which is nutty, which is allegedly members of the Ukrainian army. So I will I'll do the translation, which is written there on the screen. We address Donald Trump. Because of you, bastard, President Zelensky couldn't get any weapons. You will never be president again. You are a traitor. You will pay with your blood for what you did. And these guys who are in military uniform take an effigy of Donald Trump, including Trump's face, and set it on fire. Now, I don't know much, but I know this, Ukraine. If it's real, it's not like you've done anything to help your cause with Americans. Because if Trump wins, you're going to want the help. So for what purpose would you be making any video like this? And then you realize, well, how do you even know they made the video? It's guys in uniform holding weapons. This could have been planted. This could have been staged. The whole thing. It's hard. What's real and what's not? What happened and what didn't? Oh, getting more and more difficult every single day. But man, stuff like that makes no sense. How if that is legit? How could that make any sense? The answer is it can't. There's no one would think that that's helpful. No one would think that that's valuable or smart or worthwhile. I motivations elude. But checking, double checking, and rechecking, that's our future, man. On every news story, on every subject, everywhere. Find everything at TonyKatz.com tomorrow, everyone. Nope, Monday, everyone. Take care.